Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. I'm Colonel David Devasham, the Chairman and Managing Director of the Radiant Cash Management Services. The company was set up in 2005, and in January, on the 4th of January, we listed on the National Stock Exchange and the Bombay Stock Exchange. And you must have seen our third quarter numbers uploaded on the 20th of January and the stock exchanges. So, Radiant Cash Management Services is a company which is focused on retail cash management. Retail cash management, we are the market leaders with over 40% market share currently. And the opportunity per se is that the whole industry together today, we are doing about 1.5 lakh outlets. Of that, we are doing 60,000 outlets. 1.5 lakh outlets. Of that, we are doing 60,000 currently. And the opportunity, as per the Frost & Sullivan, independently validated by us, is about 30 lakh outlets. So when I say outlet, what do I mean? Outlet is any point, a teller, where you can pick up cash. It can be a pharmacy, it can be a school fee counter, it can be a railway station, it can be a bus stand, it can be a cash on delivery. Any point where cash is generated is called an outlet. And currently the available outlets in the country are 30 lakh outlets. We have independently validated that, and so it represents a humongous opportunity for us. Now I'll just come on to the key strengths of the company. Please open to the initial two or three pages and come on to the key strengths.
Thank you.
Now, coming on to the key strengths of the company, leading integrated cash logistics player in a consolidating industry. I would say consolidated industry. You know, down to six players. Consolidation happened because of RBI regulation in 2018. And you had to have minimum 100 crore minimum net worth and 300 vehicles, cash trucks. If you didn't have that, then you couldn't be a service provider approved by the RBI. So with that, the numbers came down to, because most of the players didn't have the minimum net worth.
100 crores minimum net worth.
100 crores minimum net worth is required.
And 300 owned vehicles.
300 cash trucks, cash vans.
Achha.
You had to have. So these are two criteria that they had laid down. And with that, you know, there were over 17 players actually there. The others are now kind of, they had to wind up. So the consolidation has happened.
Only 17 players left now.
No, right. 17 are there. Now it is down to 6.
And realistically, because not all of them operate in your RCM segment. So realistically, then what? It's 3 or 4 guys?
Just 3 or 4. Yes.
Okay.
That's what it is. Then we have a pan-India presence with a strong network in Tier 2 and Tier 3 plus locations. Over 65% of our revenue comes from Tier 3 plus locations, so which are largely cash-centric. We have a diversified client base with a long-standing relationship. We have a very marquee set of clients, and the clients, over 95% of our business comes from banks. So all the marquee customers are most of the multinational banks, the privatized banks, and in the nationalized banking sector, we have SBI as a very large client. We are empaneled with all of them, but there the business is currently a trickle, but we are empaneled with all of them. And wherever we got a client, it's been, even from 2005, they are still our clients. So there's no change in that. Robust operational risk management. This is a USP. I was from the armed forces myself. So 21% of our workforces, ex-armed forces. So that is translated, because handling public money, so I felt that, you know, the aspect of integrity, discipline and, you know, dedication is very important, but they also come with an additional quality, and that's frugality. That's why we have the best ROC and ROE numbers in the industry. So risk management wise, we have the best cash and transit loss track record in the industry. And just to give an indicator, last year we moved 1,30,000 crores. Gross cash loss was about 2.8 crores. And finally, what really hit the P&L was less than a crore. Significantly built up technology. We got our own ERP. We're very proud of. The banks also highly respect us for the ERP that we have. And as an MD, I insist on rupee for rupee reconciliation at the end of every day. And we are moving 500 crores a day. So that's possible only with cutting edge technology.
So your ERP is integrated with the bank's core banking platform?
Not all of them, but quite a few of them. We have an integration with a core banking solution. So that makes the business very sticky also. Because we work together, so they're also able to see into our software and also see the point of where the pickups have happened and so on. We have a track record of a strong financial performance. You must have seen our third quarter numbers. And this will be covered in detail later. And an experienced management team, backed by reputed institutional investors, still there with sizable equity, but they have diluted about 14% in the listing, in the time of listing. So they're on their way out. Ascent Capital is with that.
How?
So that's how it is. So these are the key strengths of our company. And to make the presentation, I'll now request Muthuraman, our head of strategy and investor relations, to take it forward. Thank you. Please feel free to ask any questions during this time. We have an hour.
Okay. Thank you, Ganil. Thanks for joining this meeting. If you can go to slide 5, I'll explain the. Because it's a unique business, I just want to take a few some time to explain the nature of the business, key revenue drivers, etc. 97% of our business comes from banks. 3%, about 2.5% comes from direct customers. Banks offer doorstep banking as a value-added service to its customers. For us, these are end customers. And in turn, banks mandate Radiant to execute that service. Banks can never send their own staff to pick up cash from customer location. That's too risky and infradig to send a bank employee to pick up, etc. So that is where we provide our service. So the end customers comes across a wide range of segments. And then the top of the chart gives the end customer profile. About 30% is from BFSI.
BFSI is in NBFCs, microfinance.
It is. Every LIC branch is our customer, end customer. Okay. Every New India, Oriental.
Every LIC branch.
Every LIC branch.
Okay.
Every Oriental Insurance, New India, United India, all of them. Most private sector life and non-life insurers are our customers.
Right.
Okay. Because people pay premium in cash, and that cash had to find its way back to the bank. Okay, so that is insurance, one segment. Microfinance, they disburse in cash, collect in cash, they are our customers. NBFCs, they disburse in cash, collect in cash, they are our customers. Gold loan companies, they disburse in cash, collect in cash, they are our customers. Many times, other smaller banks also are our end customers. And Equitas. Equitas could come to us through ICICI Bank. Equitas is a BFSI end customer. And we provide one service called cash in transit or cash flow operation. It's entirely to banks. So that's why BFSI is about 30%. Next is organized retail, about 15%. Every large store is probably among our client list. E-commerce and e-commerce logistics is about 25%. See, the cash on delivery is 50% in tier 1 locations, and that cash has to find its way back to the bank. and the cash on delivery goes up to as high as 90% in tier 4 locations.
So a person that comes from Amazon collects the cash, yes, that cash goes to the center?
Yeah, or their dark store or a warehouse.
And from there you collect
and deposit. So Amazon mandates Deutsche Bank,
okay,
say to offer doorstep banking. Okay. Deutsche Bank in turn mandates Radiant.
Okay.
So our person will go as a representative of Deutsche Bank to that dark store and collect it from that cashier every day and deposit in Deutsche Bank.
Okay.
That is the core of our service. Okay.
And what's the difference between e-com and e-com logistics?
So e-commerce is like Amazon, Flipkart, yeah, Nykaa, Myntra, yeah, etc. E-com logistics is your delivery.
Okay, the logistics guy.
Delivery, e-com express, okay, Express Bees, ShadowFax, all of them are e-com.
Essentially, they both together 25% is, yeah, on the same, basically have same, the same underlying.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, because e-com logistics has a much wider diversified this thing. Tomorrow you start a new e-com company, e-com, right, service.
Yeah.
You will use one of these guys,
yeah,
a delivery, right, or a shadow fire, right, or somebody to do the last mile logistics.
Right. Right.
So very well diversified end revenues.
Yeah.
So tea coffee, sir?
Yeah.
Hello. Coffee, no sugar.
No, I don't know.
Nothing for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Railways is about 4%. Railway station, 1,400 railway stations where they come from. Petroleum. Petroleum, we do only private sector petroleum outlets. Public sector petroleum outlets are not yet in the fray. As in the sense that they are franchises, they are not operated by the company.
Right.
COCO is only some 0.1% of the total. Company owned, company operated outlets.
Okay.
They are our end customers.
But very small, they must be using some other agency or they don't?
So that is a, in a sense, tragedy or opportunity for this industry. 90% of the industry or 95% of the industry still, they go and deposit the cash in the bank themselves.
Because it's owned by one, they have,
yeah,
one pump or two pumps.
Yeah, one pump and that franchisee. The
they can manage themselves.
No, not that they can manage themselves. They are fraught with risks for handling that large amount of cash. Even if it is just a half a kilometer away,
yeah,
it could be snatched, it could, the person could meet into an accident, it could be, as in anything could happen between these two points, right?
Okay.
So whereas the moment when we pick up, immediately the risk transfers to us and we are protected by insurance. Individual bank, individual outlet cannot go and take an insurance,
right,
for cash in transit. Because cash in transit insurance is a sophisticated insurance, we take it from London markets.
Right.
Okay.
So if you have to break up this 30 lakh outlets between, you know, there is COCO as a model which is there in organized retail as well, right? So a lot of sort of retail outlets also COCO. That then for a bank also to go to each individual and to market the services becomes a little bit of a barrier in that sense. So is,
yeah,
does that, you know, the 30 lakh then has realistically a little lower?
No, see, India has 1.2 crore retail outlets.
Right.
We are estimating that 30 lakh, we have applied this discount and arrived at this 13 lakhs based on what is the likelihood of organized retail within this
30 lakh outlets.
Whereas the entire industry as a whole is servicing less than 1.4 lakh outlets today.
Got it.
So that is the level of penetration, 3% penetration or 4% penetration.
So just to clarify, you mentioned 95%, 97% of business from banks. So, and
these are end customers.
Okay, so ideally most of this money goes to the bank.
The example, no? Amazon will come under the top layer.
Uh-huh.
But then that is service through Deutsche Bank. We will invoice only Deutsche Bank. We will not invoice Amazon.
Okay. Okay, so ideally you are appointed by the bank.
Yes.
And in turn, this, okay, got your model, right?
This is end customers and bank is our customer.
Client.
Bank is our client. These are end customers.
Oh, okay, okay. So, you know, and this is a question that maybe it's kind of interconnected with a couple of things, right? Which is, to a certain extent, that makes your ability to grow the business based upon the bank's incentives to scale this business up. Because the question I have is, you know, y'all have been in the
not
business.
Not necessarily. Hello.
Yeah. Because, you know, you've been in the business for about 15 years. There have been other players also who are there, which are about the same time, give or take a few years. Yet the industry penetration so far has only been 3%, which seems very low for, you know, where the opportunity is. So what is the constraint? Is it that the banks have not been pushing this product, or, you know, how does it, what's the incentive for the bank to actually do this from their P&L or their balance sheet perspective?
Today, 67% of the business is done at the nationalized banks.
Right.
Nationalized banks are not offering this as a service.
Okay.
SBI is the only one. That also, I always give the example of one good man called Mr. Kulkarni here.
Hmm.
Who just took it upon himself that I want to compete with the private sector.
Mm.
He just flew all over the country into all the, you know, different circles and made a beginning. And today they are the second largest client that we have. So that's the power of one good man, you know.
Right.
And we can.
What's, why these other banks are not offering this? Just
others are all, that they lack the dynamic one
that's,
person
that's
who can
the
handle.
Reason.
Unfortunately, they are all living their 9-to-5.
Yeah,
like
the mindset.
No, internet banking, you say, no? And then
yeah.
When did ICICI, HDFC start internet banking? When did your Andhra Bank start offering internet banking? This
yeah.
is a 10-year, 15-year lag.
And do these
so
banks charge their customers from the service generally?
Is it a profitable business
for
the banks?
Center for banks. Yes.
It's a profit center
for banks.
Today, I'll just tell you, give you the example of Amazon.
No,
we have to be careful somehow.
So, it is a profit center. They may offer entry-level pricing as a first-year free or something like that.
Right.
But then eventually it is a profit center.
Okay.
They do charge their end customers. So, we know.
Okay.
So,
it's
how
largely
they charge, we don't know. Again,
right.
We are not privy to that part.
And
of it.
We used to do ATM replenishment business earlier.
Very small
and,
period for a very
and
brief
which we
period.
Stopped. If
yeah.
you can tell us what was the reason behind stopping that business.
What happened is, by then there were two large players who had already completely. Normally, these businesses are all oligopoly businesses. So, CMS and AGS had already taken up, you know, total available that time when we got in was about 1,30,000 ATMs. All that 1 lakh was already being done by these two players. So, the struggle was for the rest of it, which was happening at that time. So, the pricing had been very badly undercut.
Okay.
That's it. One player came in and they completely undercut. Then there is also, see, in ATM you don't get the money directly from the banks. You have the managed service provider in between. Who are the managed service providers? You got Hitachi, you got FIS, you got FSS, you got AGS, and then now CMS also trying to become a managed service provider. So they cut it down to the bone, and those of us who were. The only way that we could differentiate was on price. So I bought a business which had 3,000 ATMs. Just in the cost of the infrastructure, because they were also bleeding, we thought we'll turn it around.
So you had 3,000 ATMs, you managed.
We acquired.
Yeah, we acquired.
Okay.
And then we realized that unless you have at least 21 ATMs per route, that's when you start breaking even and you're making profit.
Okay.
How many ATMs you said? Per
21.
And this was acquired
ATM.
In which year?
This was in
2016
and the beginning of 2019 we gave it up.
So the reason that I see the margins going up from 2019 till today is partly because of this?
Yeah.
No. That is from 2019 to now is because of our operating leverage. 18 to 19 jump was because of this.
Because the previous 4 or 5 years, you all were operating in a sort of mid-single digit sort of
that is
margin.
A very small, brief period,
yeah.
4 years.
Yeah.
That is because losses from the ATM business.
Losses from the ATM business.
So that business was losing money.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the receivable days are much longer in ATM business, is it? Or
yeah,
it's
that's
the same?
Correct. It's longer. Definitely.
I would suspect it will be more or less similar.
Yeah,
more or less similar.
18 to 90 days.
Yeah. For both of both the businesses is in the range of 70-80 days.
But there, you know, I can say this, that today those are established players, and because they got, there's no growth that's happening in that segment.
Yeah.
The ATMs are only growing by about 1-1.5% year on year. So it didn't represent a good opportunity. And here, you know, what is happening, we already had something that was very good and was really growing. It was unnecessarily impacting that.
Yeah.
So we took that as
so just continue the presentation. Most of it will get addressed in
sure.
Fine-tune it over. long period of time.
Yeah, of course.
So if you see in slide 5, there are 5 services that we offer to the banks: cash pickup and delivery, network cash management, cash processing, cash on operations and others. Cash pickup and service is the core of our business. 68.8% in the 9 months is from this segment. The example that we gave, we pick up from Amazon dark store on behalf of Deutsche Bank, so that is the cash pickup and delivery segment. For that service, we charge the bank a fixed amount per point per month. Okay. What is that amount? That amount depends on what is the location of that point and what is the daily cash limit, not what the actual cash they gave. What is the daily cash limit? Okay. So we agree into long-term contracts with banks where the pricing is agreed based on what is the daily cash limit for these limits and these locations. We have 3 categories of locations: within city limits, beyond city limits, far off locations. For this category of limits and this category of daily limits, this is the pricing.
Essentially, it's like a 2-axis and different prices.
So any new point that comes automatically goes and fits into that matrix.
Got it.
And then we start charging because we add 1,000 points every month, 1,200 points every month. There is no way we can sit and negotiate for each of the points, this much kilometer.
So you have a criteria which is set. Yeah.
So contract. Yeah. It's a long-term contract we enter into with banks, and that gets renewed every year or every 3 years, depending on bank-to-bank basis. And points get added and it automatically fits into that matrix. Okay. So to that extent, the growth of this segment, the 68% segment, is almost directly correlated with the number of points that we add. Right? Yes. Number of points that we add in tier 3 locations will have a higher impact because these are in the third category, beyond city limits. And the number of high value points like a petrol bunk or a jewelry, etc., the mix of the combination of these will also have an impact. But the base growth is number of points.
And the geographic sort of reach for yourself and the other 2 or 3 players is largely similar, or is it different?
We have the widest network. We're present in every district in the country except Lakshadweep.
Sure.
Okay. And closely following will be the second player.
Right.
And then there's a distant third.
Got it.
You see the DRSP or the RSP, you give the number of points. Give the number of points.
Yeah.
So top 2 players will have more or less similar network.
Right.
But we have the strongest network there.
Got it.
And the distant third, and then there is very minuscule.
So how does a bank then decide that these points I want to give to X versus Y, to Radiant and not, you know, the other player? Is there a it's not obviously because you're adding incremental points, it's not, and you'll have a master service, it's not a point to point negotiation or a distinct negotiation. How does that actually end up kind of working?
What happens is, like, banks have an orientation towards one particular player, but I mean the larger players today, 2 of us are empaneled with almost all of them,
right?
But they have a particular orientation with quality of service, track record, and so on.
Okay.
So we have a dominant share in most of the banks. In a couple of banks, the other competitor has got also a dominant share.
Okay. So it's kind of the banks have some preference for one, but
yeah.
I guess they don't give 100% of the business to one because they want to maintain some competitive.
In general, customer-wise, the customer normally prefers to go with one service provider.
Right.
But there are some large customers, like, you know, retail and all, you know, they're growing by thousands of points, you know. They prefer to have more than one service provider.
Okay.
And not only one bank, but they'll come to you through 4 of their banks.
Got it.
So, but at the end of it, it is, say, just 2 or 3 service providers who are managing it.
That's but one thing that our right to win is because of our strongest network.
Sure.
See, when the bank gives an order, they will first send it for feasibility request to all the players.
Got it.
So they ask us for a feasibility. Say a pizza client comes, then 700 points they give and say, ask us to give a feasibility. Ask others also to give feasibility. We may be able to give feasibility for 680 points. Whereas then player with the lesser density network, the third player will be able to give for only 400 points.
Got it.
So then the bank has a choice.
Right.
Give that 400 to that player and 300 to us.
Yeah.
Or split it equally. Or go with the player who has the widest network.
Got it.
Because more often than not, the end customer is happy to deal with only one customer, one service provider.
Got it.
Okay. So that way, we get a priority because of our dense network. So this is why the very nature of this industry is oligopolistic.
Right.
Top two players will have a lion's share of the market. Not only in India. You say take US, you take Europe.
Yeah, I saw that data in the DRH.
And between the two banks decide, you're saying based on the relationship and not, it is not a tender process.
No,
right. It's not kind.
Okay. See, our pricing across banks and for a bank, pricing across competitors is more or less the same.
And between you and the second player also, I would assume pricing is broadly in a sort of a similar range. None of you all use pricing as a lever to sort of...
No,
the pricing is already cut to the bone.
Right.
See, we can start a point...
With 30% operating margins.
I'll tell you how it is.
Yeah.
How it works. To visit a point 26 times a month.
Right.
We can start, our pricing can start as low as 1800 rupees per month.
Okay.
If daily limit is only 50,000 rupees,
right,
you will be charging from as low as 1800 rupees per month.
Right.
That will not even cover my fuel cost.
Yeah.
Right? Forget about the manpower cost. Then the then the vehicle cost. Then the overhead cost. Then our margins. Right? So the entire profitability depends on route density.
Fair.
Right. It is not so. Our pricing is really cut to the bone, Anthony.
And that's why it.
See, for a player, it makes eminent sense to outsource.
Yeah.
Because at 1800 rupees,
he'll not be able to match
his own person. A minimum wage is 10,000 rupees.
Right.
I understand. Yeah.
Fair enough. And that's also, in a sense, a barrier to entry because nobody else can compete for you.
Exactly. Yeah. The new player who comes at that pricing.
So what happened for you in the ATM is now a barrier for someone to enter into retail.
Exactly.
What
see,
that.
If the same 3,000 points, we had all of them in Tamil Nadu, we would have been profitable.
Understood.
Right.
But it is all spread all over the country.
I'll give you an example. We had one petrol pump, which was the only one that we were picking up in Maharashtra. Now the same bunk, that I'm talking about 2014, today same bunk, same route, same vehicle, but 29 points on both sides. That's the operating leverage.
Yeah.
And per vehicle you can carry up to 5 crores.
There's a limit to what you can carry,
what
mandated by RBI?
Minister of Home Affairs.
Okay.
So 5 crores you can carry. So, our vehicles are averaging about 1.5 crore maximum right now. So that's the kind of idle capacity you have.
Okay. So, on an average, you carry 1.5?
1.5 is what's currently being done.
So, you mean to say you have fairly good operating leverage still there?
There's a strong leverage still available.
Yeah.
One of the things that you've mentioned in the DRHP, because I think we have people who sort of read through and all, I guess we have a lot of this.
If you don't want me to run through the presentation, I'm happy to answer the questions.
One
point that comes to everyone's mind, and everyone would have asked you, what happens with UPI, GPay, Paytm? This cash limits, because you're charging per point as per the cash limit that they want.
Yeah.
But with the increased usage of a UPI, Google Pay or whatever, do you see people opting for a lesser cash limit going forward and thereby affecting our revenues?
Not really, but I'll take on this question. I'll give you some indicators. Like, anecdotally, it's very difficult to answer in Tier 1 India.
Yeah.
Because everybody's in my buyer's got a QR code and all that.
Yeah.
But essentially, let's look at the numbers. The cash in circulation in 2016 was 13.6 lakh crores. Today is 31.5 lakh crores, growing to 41.5 lakh crores. Cash in circulation doesn't end there. Cash in circulation is also a multiple of the velocity of cash. Velocity of cash as per RBI is 5.5. So 5.5 to 31.5 lakh crores as on date approximately translates into about 173 lakh crores. So that's the cash in circulation that we have. That each note will get transacted at least 5.5 times.
Right.
It's a huge and humongous volume of cash. The whole industry together today we are doing about 4 lakhs of cash. You know, 4 lakh crores of cash. And we did 1.3 lakh crores last year. So that's hardly 2%, 2-3% of what is current, what's the possible opportunity. That is one. Last year we made 1,30,000 crores. This year, in the first 9 months, we have moved 1,18,000 crores. We are going to do 1,60,000 crores this year.
And this growth primarily is coming from e-com, retail?
E-com, retail. These are the large drivers.
All of these.
All of them.
As in, we had a challenge in this year in petroleum sector.
Petroleum, okay. Because of one company, I mean, let's not name anyone. But because the
pricing differential between
between private and public, yeah. In the fuel pump outside, the volume dropped.
So they felt it better to export it.
Yeah.
So that is going to come back. So that
it's a temporary
thing that we
put. And because with the fuel price, do you get price revisions or no? Those contracts are fixed. So whatever may be the fuel price.
Yeah. This is, you know, because like there also everybody is saying it's all transparently there. They know how much money we're making. So it's a win-win situation. They can't cut down on the pricing any further. But because of our operating leverage, we are making money.
Right.
So that they can't, you know, in any way, they can't ask us to look at that. Because we can't bring this down any further. 1,800 rupees for a 50,000 rupee pickup, 26 times a month. You can't get it any cheaper than that.
Right.
So their banks are extremely happy because what they are charging is something else. So that's the thing. Then coming on to aspects like UPI and all, earlier there were no other method of transaction. 2020, you look at it, the digital transactions are only 11%, 8-9% cash. Now that is steadily growing, but it's, you know, these are multiple options that are there. Let's, US, you got to say 72% digitized, 28% is even today cash. But in every outlet, say in Boston, you have some amount of cash and coins getting generated. So in the greater Boston area today, retail cash pickup points are 8,000 being done by just one service provider. So that's where we are also headed. Like now we have 15-20% organized retail. Once it grows to say 70-80%, everybody will require a retail cash management service provider. So that's the future. I mean, this is, and you will see that tier 3, tier 4 accounts for over 67% of our revenues. So we also, our focus is also on a larger cash-centric area, not that we don't do business everywhere. Everywhere cash is getting generated, but that's the kind of energy that is there in the cash segment.
Is there a lot of effort that you think, because a large part of the banking system is not actually marketing this, and that obviously is a little bit of a constraint to your growth. You started doing some direct marketing, I think now it's about, you mentioned 3% of revenues. Is there a focus on trying to do that a little bit more?
I'll just tell you.
Just need the layers of growth.
Yeah.
See, there are 4 layers of growth for us. Okay. First is same store sales growth.
Right.
Okay. The outlet that starts at X rupees,
yeah,
increases this thing.
Right.
And that's not much actually. Then price escalations, etc. That's a very small number. Same store sales growth.
Right.
Second layer of growth is existing customers adding more outlets.
Sure.
Okay. Amazon, we started with say 400 outlets. Today we are servicing 2,000 outlets. Like that, each of these, as in Reliance Retail is talking of having 7 stores every day.
Sure.
So the existing customers, their own growth plans are there. That will give us the second layer of growth.
Yeah.
These two have nothing to do with the bank's outlook.
Yeah.
Right? The third layer of growth is banks offering this to more and more end customers.
Right.
For instance, you can see in our RHP and the KPI disclosures, 2019 we were servicing 2,600 end customers. Today we are servicing 3,300 end customers. That 700 customers have come from bank's own marketing efforts, right? So that is the third layer of growth.
Right.
The fourth layer of growth is our direct customers. So you hired a senior resource, chief business officer for new initiatives with a focus on directly going to direct end customers.
And what is the difference between the customer profile that you get from the banks and you are acquiring direct? They, are they little smaller network of customers?
One indicator, as I said, 67% of the business is done by the nationalized banking sector. We are not offering the service.
Okay.
But they are the same set of type of clients.
Yeah, so you can approach them.
So those are the ones we are now. We are getting the list from the banks themselves.
Right.
Okay.
And going to them as direct customers. Because now we can't keep waiting for them when they will start offering the service.
Right.
So the banks are telling you that this is our sort of current account customers, which are probably addressable for you guys.
Social engineering.
See, for the public sector banks, actually it makes sense to deal with us than with the individual working customers.
Right.
Because they will tell us, boss, you come only between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
When the traffic is low,
yeah.
Footfall is low.
Right.
Whereas working customer, he can come at any time. He can come at 10 a.m. and clog the queue.
Yeah.
Depositing 10 lakh in cash.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas they can tell us this thing.
Right.
They can, we can give the sealed bag and then trust develops and then you can open it and then count and do it after banking hours and all of that.
Got it,
So banks, for banks also, it is easier to deal with us rather than with the walk-in customers. Multiple walk-in customers. See, imagine national waste. There's a mall, 200 outlets are there. All 200 of them sending one boy with a bag to their respective banks and standing in queue and depositing versus we go collect from all the 200 outlets with an armored guard. With an armored guard in an armored vehicle, go to our bank, deposit that at the bank's convenience, and then electronically transfer to all the 200 of them. It's a lot more efficient and at such low prices.
So
it is a no-brainer for a retail.
But do you have such situation that each mall having all, most of the stores having?
So today we do through banks. So each of those customers could be banking with different banks. So they're not, I mean, it's not that a bank goes and offers current accounts to all the 200 outlets, right? Each of them have their own banks. And if they are chains, the central office will decide which bank they are operating individually. So today it is not happening like that. But when you go as a direct customer, you can pick up from all the outlets.
So even if all the 200 people would have different banks,
we can collect from all of them. We can either deposit in our account and electronically transfer them, which will be slightly more expensive for them, or we can deposit in their respective bank accounts.
So this is network cash management that you are talking about.
If we do it in our account, that is network cash management.
And that gives you a better margin?
Substantially better margin.
And that depends on the amount of cash that you collect?
Yes.
Or
we see, okay. So in the same example of Amazon and Deutsche Bank, imagine I'm doing this in a tier 3 location. Obviously, Deutsche Bank doesn't have a branch there. Will deposit in my own account and then electronically transfer it to Deutsche Bank. For that, I charge bank a fixed a volumetric pricing.
Right. So it depends on the amount of the cash.
It's purely based on the number of cash that I deposit in my account. And I also incur some costs.
So top line wise, it may be like say 18-19%, but contribution to the profitability will be significantly higher.
Yes.
This sort of brings up point of the network part of it, right? Which is, in your DRHP, you had mentioned one very interesting fact, which is that ATM business, you can't use the same infrastructure across multiple banks, but in retail, you can. Why is that the case? You know, what is the volume
of cash handled is very big in ATM.
Okay.
You load fully the 5 crore and then deposit and refill 25 ATMs and come back.
Okay.
So that is when you make the most efficiency.
Right.
Here we keep collecting 30,000, 50,000, 1 lakh, 2 lakh, 5 lakh.
Okay.
By the time we fill our van, it's only 1.5 crore.
Typically, as it works, like the vehicle is like a mother vehicle.
Right.
Now, say in Bombay and all, many places the vehicle can't go. The two wheelers are picking up, so the hub and spoke model.
Okay.
Then pick up and then there's a mother vehicle where they consistently bring them.
Okay. So it's not a regulatory thing where RBI requires you to not utilize the same infrastructure can be used for both ATM and retail.
The banks don't permit you in the SLA, SL they say.
Okay.
In case of ATMs,
right.
When our cash is moving, nobody else's cash should be there.
Okay.
Because if it is lost, whose cash it is?
No, just imagine somebody trying to combine retail and ATM.
Right.
ATM is moving 5 crores and then you are stopping somebody to pick up 20 or 30,000 rupees.
Okay.
The risk to go was manifold, no? A 5 crore vehicle stopping to pick up 30,000 rupees.
Right.
Okay. Open the vault and put that money and close it.
Right.
Risk goes up multifold.
Nobody can do it.
And so in this network cash management, largely we must be dealing with the banks that do not have the branch network. So largely foreign banks.
On the customer side, yeah. Yes. Almost all foreign banks, and in private banks, they will use both. Say for example, a 700 outlet retailer or a pharmacy chain with Axis Bank, let's say. Axis Bank may have branches in 400 locations.
But
they will pick up that full mandate for 700. Yeah. For 400, we will charge them only the first segment. For the balance 300, we will charge them first as well as the second.
Okay.
That's all.
So again, coming back to this. So in the ATM, it kind of, let's say Hitachi, somebody who is doing like, bank branches for Axis also, HDFC also. So they can service multiple banks in a single route. But no, it has to again be that level of sort of segregation.
Normally, you see what happens is you can't mix the cash.
Okay.
But if they are doing it on their own, I've been from the army, that is one of the things I give up ATM.
Okay.
I said, suppose by some chance there's a cash loss.
Right.
It'll be a huge,
Which bank's cash is that?
Okay.
What do you say?
Okay.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Right. You have mixed cash from different banks and you're not supposed to be doing that. So that's the thing.
Okay. But then you have the same issue in retail, right? Like, let's say if there's a retail loss and you picked up from Reliance Retail and a D-Mart, whose cash is that?
No, that 100% is my risk.
That's 100%.
That's 100%
your risk. I take CIT insurance and I will reimburse immediately.
Isn't the CIT insurance available for the ATM business as well? I'm just trying to understand, because there are different points of views within the players, right?
That is one thing I found very odd in ATM world.
Right.
Banks insisting that you won't put somebody else's cash in a vehicle.
Okay. That's okay. So the banks
is part of the SLA itself,
Okay.
So
fair enough.
See,
I'm aware of the fact that all the players are taking other banks' cash also.
Right.
But personally, I found it, that when you're going, say, instead of 5 crores, you're moving, say, 7 or 8 crores, over 2.5 crores belong to some other bank.
Right.
I found the risk was, unpalatable, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah. See, the point is, it is insured.
Right.
Where if you're losing 3 lakhs, 5 lakhs, 7 lakhs,
right.
You will get it, in the sense, you will not immediately, we'll
go to the process.
Bank and then we'll reimburse the bank in a few days' time.
Right.
And then we lodge our complaint and then get it.
Right.
But if the risk is 3 crores, 5 crores kind of thing,
right.
It gets escalated across the bank hierarchy, right? All
sure.
Over the place.
Of course.
The day-to-day handling is very different. And because of losses, your next year premium will go up.
Got it.
Substantially.
Of course.
Right? So you cannot, slack in any of these because it is insured.
Premium is steadily coming down.
What is the premium that we pay for annual premium?
About 4 crores.
Okay,
that's 35-38 lakhs is monthly amount. 4 crores.
Okay.
4.5 crores. Yeah. See, 4 crores is high compared to our cash losses. But 4 crores is very small compared to the volume of cash that we move. We move 1.3 lakh crores.
Right.
500 crore every day. So the risk remains for the 500 crore, right?
Yeah. Risk remains for maybe 500 crores. On a Monday after a long weekend, it will be 1200 crores.
Yeah.
Right? Long weekend, the 3 days, heavy, this thing, etc. Particularly festive season and all. The peak that we have handled in a day is 1300 crores.
And so our expertise, as I see, is security and logistics. Is there any other area where we can apply this, say, moving any other high-value items like, say, gold or jewelry, other than cash? Are we thinking about something like that?
Bullion, is one place where the infrastructure is very similar.
The pricing is much better.
Right.
So that is one area we are definitely looking at very seriously now.
Okay.
How to take it forward.
Bullion management.
Bullion. And competition also, the players, they're all doing about 200, 250 crore turnover kind of thing. Not much, not very, So we feel that we can definitely come in that with a strong network. Because even in tier 2, tier 3 locations, jewelers and all, they all require movement of their...
Yeah, because loan against gold, gold loans are there everywhere.
So. Everywhere. So, our network, I think we can leverage. And initially build on tier 2, tier 3. And then leverage that to get prime.
So we're thinking about it, we've not started it as yet.
So we are in the process of hiring people who have it. Been in that field for a long time.
Okay.
So currently, I've interviewed a couple of them. That's where we are. But it's definitely one segment we want to quickly add on.
And so I've seen what we hire our bands and our security personnel from our group company. So is there a regulation for which we have to do this?
Regulation?
I'll explain. See, the group company is called Radiant Protection Force.
Yeah.
The regulation in India is that any company that hires an armed guard should have a PSARA license, Private Security Agency Regulation Act. And it's a state subject. Every state you need to have a license for hiring an armed guard. And the company that hires, if it has a foreign investment, it's an approval route. If it is a domestic company, then it is there is no this thing. So it is a standard industry practice to separate the armed guard hiring.
So all your competitors entity. Also do it this way?
May not have in group companies. They may be using third party service providers.
Mm.
Okay. But it is never in the industry company, the armed guards are not hired. And so this was done way back in 2015 when we were looking for private equity.
Mm.
Unless we do this, we restrict our target PE funds to only domestic PE funds.
Understood.
Okay. And it is an arm's length transaction, cost plus 9%. It works as a fairly integrated unit. And those financials are available in public domain. There's hardly any, as in the 9% is actually towards the cost of
administering.
As in typically you could see any manpower company.
It's break even, almost, you know, it's like 2-3 lakh profit or.
That's something like that.
How much you pay, you said?
9%, cost plus 9%. It is towards the administration.
And now we are trying to purchase some vans ourselves and moving away from the rental model.
No, not moving away.
Okay.
This is a one-time risk management measure that we are doing to have about 20% of our fleet on our own books. See, we do hire a lot of ad hoc vans. And second is that we have seen in the industry, if you are dependent on a vendor, see, even the Radiant Protection Force don't own those vehicles. They return a lease out from lease plan and NBFC or from the third-party service providers.
Right.
So what happens is, if you're dependent on a third-party service provider, if their staff was on strike or something like that, the entire business gets crippled. So having a 20% of your own fleet is a risk mitigation strategy to protect yourself from any such adverse incidents. And also better negotiating power, bargaining power with those vendors. And so this is a one-time, this thing, about 22-23 crores we are spending towards 220 vehicles. 40 vehicles have already been ordered, which will come in this quarter, and balance 180 vehicles in over the next year. But even for these vehicles, the armed guards and driver, etc., will still come from the Radiant Protection Force.
What is the historical growth rate of this industry? Because, you know, if I take a look at, like, while y'all have grown very well over a longer term, right, last 7-8 years, the rest of the players have all been in the mid-single sort of digit sort of growth rate. Some have been even declining or, you know, just flattish. So I'm just trying to understand, because obviously, you know, there have been some market share gains that y'all have done. But I want to understand, historically, how much has this industry grown by?
Yeah, but Frost and Sullivan puts that industry growth at about 15-16%.
That's forward looking. I'm trying to
answer. Historical as well.
Okay.
See, what happens is, historical data beyond the DRHP period, you may not get segment wise like this.
Right.
Because except us, who are dedicatedly in retail cash management, all other players, for them, this is also another segment.
Right.
If you say CMS, they are more in ATM management and if you say writers, they are more in the document management and several other businesses. If you see SAS procedure, SAS, they are more in the man guarding business mainly. If you see AGS, remote management service, managed service providers, and
right.
ATM providing and all of that.
Right.
This is, and Bring Saria didn't get their act right in India. They had some labor problems in the start, and then they never took off.
Right.
So if you see all the other five players, there are only six players who qualified. All the other players, this is one of these smaller segments in their overall scheme of things.
Right.
For us, this is a dedicated business.
Yeah.
So you will not be able to get this segment revenue alone from all of this from long term.
Right.
But our own historical experience indicates the industry would have grown at mid-teens and we would have grown at high teens
right.
historically. And with the stronger capital base today, our ability to invest in direct sales team
right.
and better awareness about the service.
Yeah.
Consolidation. Who would have thought 5 years back you will order medicines, pharmacy, grocery, everything at your doorstep.
Right. right.
I mean, all this has happened in 5 years time, right?
Right.
So every end customer will start demanding the service from their banks, right? As because it's a risk mitigation strategy, it is not very expensive. So they have to necessarily demand from their clients,
right.
from their banks, or directly from us. So we expect that the growth rates will see a higher this thing. Industry as a whole, Frost & Sullivan estimates about 19%. Us being a market leader, we expect to grow at a slightly higher pace. In terms of revenues,
right.
but if you see our profitability, if you just see the slide number, slide number 17, that clearly demonstrates the thing. For this 3 months, for this 3 months, Rightmost, revenues grew at 19%, EBITDA grew at 42%, and PAT grew at 53%. For that 9 month period, revenue at 27%, EBITDA at 60%, and PAT at 73%. Clearly indicates the operating leverage in this business. There are reasonably high fixed cost, and then thereafter, incremental revenues have a disproportionate impact on our EBITDA. So
right.
that's
so
how
when
we.
When I was reading,
so
I.
So we are expecting that industry as a whole will grow at high teens.
Right.
We will grow at a slightly higher pace. I think Kurl has gone on record expecting 22-24% kind of revenue growth.
Yeah,
and a much higher.
Targeting 22-24%.
And a higher growth in EBITDA impact.
So in RHP it was mentioned we are present at 55,000 locations, 11,000 pin codes and 55,000 points and 5,000 locations. So what is the difference between points and location?
No. Pickup point is an actual point.
Okay.
As in
the retail store
mall,
or something.
If you go to a mall and a pickup from
that is the point.
That is 10 points.
And location is the city.
Location. Yeah, city.
Okay.
So it's not exactly city.
The
Mumbai
town.
Mumbai could be
say
Mumbai, Thane.
Understood. The area.
Virar would be
okay.
four different locations. In Mumbai alone would be some 4 or 5 locations. Chennai would be 2 locations. Delhi could be 4 or 5 locations.
Right.
Noida, Gurugram, Delhi, etc. will be each location. Right.
There was a deep penetration from other very strong networks.
Yeah.
Currently, I don't know who else would be having this kind of a dense network.
Sure.
Yeah.
And our volume that we collect, the cash, is not concentrated in any geographical area. It's spread across.
Yes. Region agnostic. Across the country. Some places we find lesser cash because lesser work is happening there.
The last point of the financials, slide 18, gives our cash flow from operations after working capital changes have grown by 37% from 31 crores last year 9 months to last year full year to 42.5 crores in the 9 months itself.
So it is a cash generating business. So any thoughts on dividend policy that you have?
Policy we have not.
You have not put out a payout
because
you
have also
given
some interim dividend
now.
Dividend now
itself, that was based on the existing shareholders, you know, their request and so on. But we haven't given a, it won't be right for me to specify some number or percentage. We are looking at a strong dividend distribution policy.
But if you see our track record in the last, from FY19 till the December things, we have distributed 67 crores in dividends.
And lastly, sir, the OFS faced some issue in the closing and I think we had to cut the size. So the investors are looking, I don't know if you're aware of it, but what is their thought process now? Because they have not sold completely that they wanted to sell.
Yeah, they are holding on for another 6 months.
They have a lock-in, right, for 6 months? They don't have a lock-in.
They have a domestic venture capital fund.
Okay.
So venture capital funds have a lock-in only from the date of their investment. They invested in 2015.
Right. Okay.
So they don't have a lock-in.
They don't have a lock-in.
But the understanding is that at least for
6 months.
6 months they won't, and then some portion for 1 year.
Okay.
Fair.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Stop this here.
Great questions.
Thank you. We'll come and meet you.